on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to another edition of Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, June 10th, 2025 edition, and I'm especially excited for this hour. A lot of great topics on the docket from current market news, as well as our main focus point, which are a few variables when it comes to retirement that really are controversial and need a little bit of a deeper dive. And that's what we were here to do in this hour. You know, that's what people love podcasts for, is a deeper dive into particular topics, not just headlines, but kind of color to the pros and the cons of each decision. And that's what we are here to help you with. The world is not black and white. The world operates in shades of gray, whether that's when it comes to retirement planning, whether it comes to your investments. There are pros and cons. There are weighing the options that you might have and seeing which one fits your particular needs, your goals, your risk tolerance level, etc. And that's what this show is about. It's about setting your mindset so that you can make better decisions consistently with your money and not be prone to the mistakes that the average person makes, which is using their emotions of fear or greed that will drive their decision-making process. That's the antithesis of what a successful investor does. So our job is to help you become that successful investor. And we'll do that by giving you data, perspective, with over 25 years of investment experience, as well as answering your finance and investment questions. Because I can sit here and bloviate about whatever is on my mind at any given time, but what's most important is what's on your mind. So your calls drive this show. Always your questions, however you get it to us, you will be a number one. Now, in just a bit, we're going to talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
I'd love to get your opinion on General Mills, stock symbol GIS. Wanted to get your opinion, see if you thought it was a good long-term hold, and see what you thought a good entry point would be. Thanks.
All right, looking at General Mills, and this is a name that's been really down on its luck. It peaked out around $90 per share in mid-2023, so about 2 years ago is when it peaked out, and now we're at $54 per share. So quite the drop, about 40% drop from its all-time high, and this is what you would imagine would be a blue chip name, General Mills. Think of all the cereals that you've bought throughout the years, the specialty foods, the yogurts, the doughs, all of those tried and true names like Nature Valley and Cheerios and Old El Paso, Pillsbury, Betty Crocker, etc., Haagen-Dazs. This is all General Mills. The issue is that more and more people are pivoting their purchases to what we call the outside of the stores, right? Either the freezer section or the fresh produce section. So, you know, history says, or the recent history says, that the demand shift by the consumer is dramatic. And you can see that in their free cash flow, their profitability. It peaked out in 2021, free cash flow about $3.2 billion. And it hit a recent low around $2 billion. It has peaked up to about, perked up to about $2.5 billion, but still in a longer-term downtrend. And that is the issue. Earnings were $3.94 in 2022. Earnings have continued to go up over the past couple of years, but this year, earnings are finally expected to drop 7% this year and 4% next year. So what they were doing with that cash flow is they were buying back shares, which typically is a good thing to do, good allocation of capital, as long as your stock is relatively cheap. And, you know, General Mills, doesn't trade at a high premium, typically, at least lately. Its current P ratio is 12, for example. So that typically is a good thing. But what that often does is it hides the underlying deterioration in its business. Because what happens is the share count drops and they're able to manufacture earnings per share growth, even when underlying net income is falling, for example. And net income, total net income, fell from $2.9 billion in 2022, and now it's at $2.55 billion. So while earnings per share has gone up, the total profits has declined. And that's the worry here. And with the amount of debt that they have about $14 billion in debt. Now, I don't think they're in a risk of cutting that dividend in the short term, but I don't like the demand trends for these traditional packaged food companies. And that's why I think you are kind of chasing a value trap. And I would be very patient with it. Last quarter, revenues were down 5%. Earnings were down 15%. This upcoming quarter, revenues are supposed to be down 3%. Earnings down 29%. So it's just not a good, they're not good trends here for the business. And until that turns around, I would absolutely pass on General Mills, GIS. Thanks for the call. Now, our main focus point is this headline. Three tricky decisions every retirement plan must address. So we're going to look at things like withdrawal rate. Is the 4% rule? Does that make sense? Depends. We'll give you some color there. Long-term care insurance. That industry has shifted. We'll talk about that. And then the pros and cons of buying an annuity. I'm sure all of you have been pitched an annuity at some point. What do the numbers say? What type of annuities make sense for people? Should you buy one at all? And why are only variable and variable annuities pitched and universal whole life and things like that? So we're going to dig into that story and more. And more includes a check-in on China. How have they been impacted so far in their industrial base due to the tariffs? And then we know that the dollar has weakened since Liberation Day. Part of that will help the potential reindustrialization of the United States to make our products more competitive. But what it also is doing is pushing in foreign investors to look elsewhere because the currency dynamic is now becoming a headwind versus a tailwind. And that means in many instances, they're looking to other countries to invest their money. And the question is it going to go to Europe? Is it going to go to Asia? Is it going to go to South America? We'll dig into those numbers as well. We also have questions from the InvestTalk Voice Bank. SPGI is one stock that we're going to be asked about. And then Alexandria Real Estate Equities, ARE. And then we have questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel as well. But more importantly, will be your live call. So if you have, you're listening live from 4 to 5 Pacific time and you have a question, don't hesitate to pick up the phone and talk to me right now. Now we're heading into a short break, and on the other side, I'll talk about today's market activity and take more of your questions from the InvestTalk Anytime listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Hello, InvestTalk. This is Jose from New York, and I'm looking into buying a small position in Dollar Tree or Dollar General.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
Hi, InvestTalk. I was calling in with a question on the stock Nike.
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
Now, it is up into a little bit of resistance, so you probably want a little bit of consolidation here.
So this company does not capitalize itself with equity. It does not capitalize itself with debt.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Let's play a caller question from 888-99-CHART.
This is James from Georgia. I was trying to call about ticker symbol SCCO.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
I appreciate the show, guys. Thank you.
888-99-CHART.
No matter what our day looks like, I think we can agree that we all need nourishment that fuels us, right? So let me tell you about Kachava's whole body meal shakes. I'm really liking them. And bonus surprise, The cachava shakes come in five delicious flavors: chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, coconut acai. Variety is a good thing, and it's easy to incorporate cachava's whole body meal shakes into my daily routine. I like to personalize my cachava by adding nice touches like frozen blueberries, almond milk, creatine. For me, the idea is to mix it up while keeping my body and mind nourished all day. In fact, cachava is a whole body meal with plant-based protein that actually tastes delicious. In those five indulgent flavors I mentioned, you get 25 grams of 100% plant-based protein with every two scoops of cachava. You get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Cachava is non-GMO. There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. There's no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. You can even try cachava risk-free with their Love It guarantee. Fuel your day with cachava. Go to cachava.com and use code INVEST for 15% off on their subscription for a limited time. That's cachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code INVEST for 15% off.
The Invest Talk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here. Call Invest Talk 888-99-CHART.
Let's go check in on the markets today for June 10th, 2025. It was a modest up day. You had the S&P up about 0.5%, the NASDAQ up about 0.2%. The NASDAQ was driven by gains in Tesla, up about 5.6%, so you continue to see a bounce back. And kind of a quelling of the battle between Trump and Elon. We'll see if that continues, but that really helped the markets today. Google also up about 1.4%. I think there was some news around ChatGPT. And then you had Apple up about 0.6%, NVIDIA up a little less than 1%. The strongest part of the market, though, actually energy did fairly well. Despite oil prices ticking down a little bit, ExxonMobil was up 2%. But the retail side actually languished a little bit. Walmart was down slightly. Amazon was barely up. Costco barely up as well. So that was probably the weakest area of the market. You did have some pockets of weakness around in the finance space. So the insurance companies were struggling a bit. And that's of note to me. Insurance companies have been leading the finance space, but recently names like Progressive down over 2% today. You had Chubb down about 1.2% today. So definitely some weakness out of there. But from a catalyst perspective, there really wasn't a whole lot to speak of. There's still not any news out of London in regards to the US and China trade negotiations. You have a floating of Scott Bessent as the next Fed chair. Markets may have liked that, but it's still unclear, you know, what about his current position? Will he do both or resign, et cetera? That's just kind of a rumor as of now, even though Trump says that the new Fed chair pick will likely come relatively soon. Remember, Jerome Powell doesn't leave until May of next year. So there's still a ways away, nearly a year, about 10 months before he actually leaves his post. So, but market will certainly react on what happens on that front. When it comes to other assets, yields on treasuries were roughly flat. You had dollar about flat. Bitcoin was up about 0.9% on the day. WTI was down about 0.5% on the day. And we get CPI data tomorrow. That could be a big market mover, but we shall see how that comes in. I think the bigger number is the PPI on Thursday, Producer Price Index. That's a leading indicator to CPI and inflation. And I'll be paying more attention to that than CPI, but certainly CPI could move markets. Now, from time to time, we also receive InvestTalk questions from our comment section on the InvestTalk YouTube channel. So let's go answer one of those questions now. Hi, guys. Brett from New Jersey here. I recently asked ChatGPT to randomly select some stocks with large upside potential. One of the three recommended APLD. APLD. Now, here's the first issue I have with this question. Is all he looked at was upside potential. That's not how you invest. If all you care about is upside potential, you go buy a bunch of penny stocks, right? because though they have the most upside potential, they can double, triple, quadruple in a very short period of time. That's upside potential. But we know based on history, 99 out of 100 penny stocks, they stay penny stocks and they sit there for a long time and eventually they get delisted and you know you lose all your money. So the risk reward there is not very good. So what you should be asking, and not to say ChatGPT or any of the AI tools are going to do it well, is what's the best risk versus reward in the marketplace right now? The largest upside potential is not what you want. Okay. Now he's saying last Monday, they announced the lease with CoreWeave for worth $7 billion. Now that is, if I look at the earnings expectations, it is helping earnings expectations for next year and the year after, but they're still supposed to lose money. Okay. So it moved up already. It's discounted that. What else is next? Okay. He says at one point I was up over 100%, currently up around 90. This was a tiny percentage of my portfolio, which I tend to take higher risks with. Can you look into this company? Let me know if it's something I should hold on to, buy more, or trim. Well, like I said, it's still losing money. And let's see, what does it do here? It's a $2.8 billion at a market cap after it did move from about through about $4 in, when was this? May? To $12 now. So he's obviously up a lot. They operate next-gen data centers, computer power to blockchain infrastructure, and support Bitcoin mining. Okay, so this is very Bitcoin crypto adjacent, and it's going to move with Bitcoin price and crypto prices. And crypto prices tend to move with liquidity. Liquidity is good in the marketplace, then you know Bitcoin and crypto tends to do well. So this is basically a proxy bet, a leverage bet on Bitcoin and crypto. If that's what you're looking for, then this would be the name that you want to buy. Right. And you kind of throw out the fact that it loses money because it's generally going to have a high correlation and high leverage to the Bitcoin price. And if that's what you're, that's all speculation. That's not an investment. This is a speculative vehicle, similar to a MicroStrategy, right? It's not an investment. It's a speculative vehicle. And there's different levels of risk when it comes to crypto and Bitcoin. And you need to understand that, right? IBIT is just Bitcoin price. And that's very unlevered, single, you know, one-for-one movement percentage-wise with Bitcoin. And so it depends on what type of risk you are willing to take. If Bitcoin, I've said this before recently, if Bitcoin breaks 100,000, that's a, it kind of invalidates its bullish trend right now. And you could see Bitcoin go back down to sub 50,000. And this would probably plunge to $2, right? Or maybe less. So that all depends. Is Bitcoin and crypto, or is that universe staying in a bullish pattern right now for the short term? It is. But once again, it can change rather quickly. And you need to be aware of that. Now we're moving into a break. Still to come, my focus point, more answers to your questions. So I encourage you to call now on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here. Call Invest Talk 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today is about retirement planning and three tricky decisions every retiree tends to face. And as more and more people rely less and less on pensions, right? About, I think it's only one in four baby boomers have a pension of some type. So it means that managing things like taxable withdrawals from your accounts, dealing with RMDs, appropriate asset allocation, these are all aspects of retirement planning that can be challenging. But there are three that really depend on your situation and the current market situation when it comes to insurance as well as the investment side. And so those include withdrawal rates, long-term care, and annuities. So let's bite one off at a time. Now, the first one is withdrawal rates. And everyone asks, how much money can I withdraw each year safely? And the answer is simply unknowable. There are too many variables to for anyone to give you a solid 100% answer. Okay. But you have to really start somewhere. Okay. You have to look at what your likely life expectancy is. Even though you may only live 15 years, you also might live 40. Also, you don't know what asset classes will return over those 20, 30, 40 years of retirement, but you can have a pretty good guess based on valuations and history. And you don't know where inflation's going. So is inflation going to continue to stay around 3% or more? Probably. We think 3% is more of a base case going forward, but that's just an educated guess, just like anybody else. Now, research conducted in 2021 suggests that a 3.3% withdrawal rate was a safe starting place for retirees. The issue, though, was that back then, equity prices were very, very expensive, and interest rates were very, very low. So the expected forward return for equities was very low, and the expected forward return for bonds was also very low. Now, that's shifted. As of late 2023, it actually, based on equities falling in 2022, having a little rebound in 2023, but still cheaper than they were in 2022, so a better longer-term equity return expectation. And then yields were higher as well. So now, if you invested in bonds, well, now you're getting a much better yield. Instead of 3 or 4%, in many instances, you're getting 5, 6, 7%. And at the end of last year, because equities rallied and became expensive once again, the safe withdrawal rate was 3.7%. And this is assuming a balanced portfolio. Now, everybody can be different, right? And so you have to look at older retirees. Well, you can have a little bit higher withdrawal rate than younger retirees. And then also you need to be flexible. So if the market's down, your portfolio is down, you have to be flexible too. Maybe you take one less vacation that year. Maybe you don't splurge as much on the grandkids for Christmas that year, etc. And then try to maximize your non-portfolio income. This is where retirement or Social Security planning comes in. Maybe a pension, annuity, rental income. These are other sources of income besides just your investments. So delaying Social Security and a Social Security strategy is one big example of that. It's something we help our clients with when we develop financial plans for them. So when we have a client, it's not just the investment side, it's also the planning side as well. And this stuff is included. This is part of what we talk about. And then there's long-term care. And it's uncomfortable. Why? Because if you have to use long-term care, it's losing independence. But about half of retirees need long-term care at some point. And that's a pretty good odds that you will need long-term care. And most of that long-term care is not covered by Medicare unless you don't have very much money at all. And you go beyond just a rehab stay after the hospital. Genworth said that long-term care, a year's worth of long-term care, costs about $111,000. That's up 7% from the previous year. Now, the question is, do you need it? Well, ideally, if you have enough money, you self-insure, meaning you put money aside for that long-term care at some point. For example, when you turn 85, there's an exponential increase in your potential need for long-term care, to go in a retirement home, etc. And so you have to think about that. Now, if you're somewhere in the middle, you're not too poor to qualify for Medicaid, then you probably want to self-insure. Or sorry, you probably want long-term care in some way. The problem is that a lot of insurers have just resigned from the industry as a whole. And there are a lot of hybrid products that are riders on top of existing life insurance policies. So a term life with a long-term care policy is probably the best way to go if you're going to go in this direction, or a fixed annuity along with a rider, like for long-term care, that would probably be the best way to go. And this feeds into the last one, which is buying an annuity. And this is pretty simple. Only if your Social Security income needs don't fulfill your basic retirement expenses, that's when you may want to opt for a fixed annuity only. Okay? There you go. We're heading to a break. Give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
...2025 rolls on, and you might have some fresh questions for Justin or Luke. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. I'm calling today about the home builders. I'm curious how you guys feel about that sector right now. I'm looking specifically at Tri Point Homes, TPH. I used to own this company along with Pulte Group, PHM, and I did sell out of it. I had some cash on the sidelines. I was thinking about dipping my toes in now, if you think now is the right time and they are undervalued. And I'm thinking maybe if and when the interest rates go down a little bit, there will be high demand. It may take, 6 months, maybe a year, maybe even longer. But I'm wondering if I start dipping my toes in now, the sector right now is, I think, a little hated. If you think that'll do well, I think Tri Point Homes, looking at the chart, is a little bit better. It looks like it hit some pretty good support. If you could let me know how you feel about these companies. Thank you. Have a great day. Bye.
Yeah, I will say that the charts on both Tri Point and Pulte are starting to improve a bit. Now, it could be very short-lived. I do think that we are entering a housing market that is a lot more balanced, at least in the short term. I'm seeing, inventories rise, not to levels. There's all these doom and gloomers. I see these on YouTube all the time. All these people that are calling for an 08 crash, and they've been doing it for years, and they have no idea what they're talking about. But a lot of people watch them. They get a lot of views. They get hundreds of thousands of views, and all of these people think there's going to be an imminent housing market crash. And the simple fact is there's just not the forced sellers out there that will cause that. Now, could it build and could we get there into a really, really bad, bad market where there's just a ton of excess inventory across the country at some point in the next 5 years? Sure, but it's not now, right? But there are parts of the country, Austin, Texas is a good example. I think there's areas like Utah that are pretty overvalued and have excess inventory. So there are pockets, and that's certainly true. And there's issues with Florida and some of the insurance issues down there. But largely, there's a demographic demand that is really, I think, holding up the housing market in the shorter term, we call it the next few years, and that is the millennial generation. Millennial generation peak first-time home buyer age is right now, between now and 2028. And so until after that, then you can maybe see demand trailing off. But right now, you're also not seeing a lot of new supply coming on market, especially the existing home markets. People are locked in their 3% mortgages. They're not giving those up. So not to say that things can't get bad in the future, but it's just interesting. The last 3-4 years, everyone's talking about a huge crash and it hasn't happened. But now we're back into a more balanced market. But until we can get into, until I feel more confident in the labor direction, because I think the market's a bit off on where the labor market has headed over the past month. I'm seeing a lot more deterioration than anyone's really talking about. So I think that's one issue. And there is, over the medium term, a dearth of new supply, and the home builders have been a big factor in fulfilling that lack of supply. Now, as the market becomes more balanced, I'm more neutral on these names. And so I would be patient despite the charts looking up in the short term. If you're looking for a short-term trade, a month or two, I could see that. I could see these rallying 10, 15, 20%. But to say this is entering some new longer-term uptrend, I would be reticent to predict that. So it depends on if it's a trade or it's long-term. As a trade, yes, as a long-term hold from these levels, I'm just not not buying it quite yet until I think you want to buy these and really own these probably coming out of the next recession. And I'm sure we'll get one in the next few years. Now let's keep things moving and play another listener question from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I love the show. I was calling about S&P Global, SPGI. Just wanted to know what you think of it. It's worth buying for the long term. Thank you. I'll be listening on the show.
All right. Looking at S&P Global, most people know this from the S&P 500, and they make fees from ETFs and index funds that track the S&P and other S&P 500, as well as other S&P indexes, indices. And so they make money off that, but they also make money by rating bonds. And one reason why their earnings continue to go up is A, money's flowing into these index funds continuously, as well as you're actually going into a refinancing cycle on the bond market, corporate bond market, especially later this year and into next year in a big, big way. And they'll obviously earn fees by rating these issues. However, it is trading at expensive levels, 32 times current earnings. Even if you go based on forward-looking earnings of nearly $19 per share, you're still in the high 20s multiple, which is not cheap. Now, it's a great business. Return equity is actually, it's not that amazing, 10%. That's good. Let me see. It's been on decline. I don't love that. So, yeah. It's profitable, but not gangbusters. Its enterprise value is $172 billion, and its free cash flow is $5.5 billion. That's not a great free cash flow yield. I don't love that. Enterprise value to EBITDA right now is around 25, and its five-year range, yeah, it's about in the middle of its five-year range. So I don't see that as being particularly cheap. Price to sales is at 11. Rarely like those companies that trade at north of 10 on a price to sales ratio. This typically bottoms out closer to 8 or 9 times sales. So, you know, it's a fine business. I just worry about that, you know, the ebb and flow of the rating side. And then, you know, will money flowing out of, say, the S&P 500 overseas, that could hurt total assets in index funds over time as well, especially the S&P, more diversity, maybe more global indices. MSCI is one of those type of names that tends to own more global indices or put out more global indices, and more products are tracked to the MSCI when it comes to global markets. So I think there could be money there. And the technicals are just okay. They're neutral. It's kind of hanging around. It's a flat 200 and 100-day moving average, and it's just kind of hanging around there. So I just don't see this as a great risk versus reward right now. I think at some point it could get cheap. If this gets down, say, sub $400 per share, right now it's at 513, that's where I might pick it up. But until it gets below there, I would keep it on the watch list. It wouldn't be a name that I'm picking up right this moment. Now let's touch a bit on China. And we know that the trade war is calmed down a bit, but still 30% on Chinese-made goods is still Smoot Hawley-like, let's just say that. And then you have 10% elsewhere to kind of cover what a lot of companies are doing, which is moving their products from China, not completely finished, and then in another country, finishing the last, you know, 5 to 10% of the product, and then shipping it to the United States. And it now comes not from China, but from that other country. You've seen that with, you know, during the height of the trade war, a couple months ago, you know, there were Chinese factories that were saying, hey, we're making Birkin bags. We're making all of these very high-end designer products, and they ship them 90% completed over to Italy, and they put a zipper on it, and now suddenly it's made in Italy, and now it's exported to the United States, for example. So a lot of companies are doing that. That's why they're keeping the 10% on. It's still impacting the Chinese business and their export business, but not as deeply as was first feared. Now, according to customs data, China exports to the U.S. was down 34.5% year over year in May in value terms. So you know, if you get a 30% charge or 100% charge or whatever that tariff is at the time, the bigger, the higher price that product is, the bigger the tariff. Now, what's happening as well is they're doing things like charging separately for maybe design services or something that's not part of the product, and then making the product value lower. So it might have, before it was being imported for $30, now they charge some of that as a design service or some other type of service, and now they export it at $20. And net-net, it's about the same price. So that's part of this as well, because it's that 34.5% is in value terms. So how much of that is raw products not being shipped, and how much of that is the products just quote-unquote dropping in value? So that's interesting as well. Total exports from the Asian giant expanded 4.8% year on year in value terms last month. That's total exports. Okay, so it still was up year over year because a lot of those goods, once again, were just being shipped to another country, or maybe they gave deals to Europe and Russia and South America to kind of keep the factories going. Now, Reuters was expecting the growth to be about 5%, so it missed that a little bit, but it is still down from the high in April of 8.1%. Okay, so down from 8.1 to 4.8. So it is having an impact in value terms. Imports did drop 3.4% year over year, so clearly they're not bringing as much materials and widgets in to put more products together. So that is deepening. Exports had surged 12.4% year over year and 8.1% in March and in April. So that's where they rush shipments to the US and other countries. And then China's imports from the US, from the United States, that was down 18.1% in May from a 13.8% drop in April. So it fell 31% year over year in April and down 18.1% in May. So it's really hurting our companies because they're just looking elsewhere. And they don't want to deal with the reciprocal tariff, right? Now they have a reciprocal tariff on us. So it now makes our products less competitive to China. And their trade surplus in May continues to grow to $103 billion from $96 billion the previous month. So this is the data here. It's not really kneecapping the Chinese economy. You know, they're putting in stimulus measures, and it's something they're dealing with. But from this, if you go based on this data, it's actually hurting U.S. companies more than it is Chinese companies. Now let's roll in another quick question.
Hi, Luke and Justin. Longtime caller here from the Midwest. Love your show. Thank you much for everything. Hey, I have a quick question. I've had a company, CSL is a ticker symbol, for quite a while. It's been in a slump lately, and I don't know if Carlyle is going to do anything here for a while or not, because I don't know. I'm nervous with interest rates and everything about housing and what's going to happen here in our future. Do you think that'd be a good one to sell? And what I'm looking at is ITW. I've heard you say many good things about that company in the past, its consistency and so forth. Would that be a good purchase to make in the future for a long-term hold? Thank you so much. Look forward to hearing your response on the show. Have a good day.
Are you looking at Carlyle Companies? CSL is a symbol, about $16 billion market cap. And it manufactures and sells single-ply roofing products. And it has two segments, construction materials and weatherproofing technologies. And it mainly is for the commercial building industry. And I don't know if you know this, but right now in the United States, we're actually tearing down more office buildings than we're building. So that's one issue here. And if you look at its earnings, let's see, it's flat, expected to be up about 9% this year, 13% next year. That's okay. But last quarter, revenues were flat. Earnings were down 3%. So I don't know where they're going to get to this 9% earnings growth. It doesn't pencil out for me. And free cash flow is $758 million. That is that down? Let's look at the peak. Yeah, it's down from about $1 billion. So, you know, free cash flow is down about 25% over the past couple of years. That's one issue that I have. Now, they're keeping earnings per share going up because they're buying back stock. So, you know, the underlying business is certainly deteriorating to a degree, and that's why you're getting this declining a bit. So I don't mind it. I think it's a solid business. I just don't love the backdrop because of the commercial real estate exposure there. But I do like the balance sheet. I do like the return equity on 47%. I like the free cash flow, even though it's come down. That dividend of 1% can certainly go up. They have plenty of room to raise that with a dividend pay or cash dividend payout ratio of only 23%. So there's some things to really like about this business. And then you asked about Illinois Tool Works. And historically, this is a good business that usually can go in. And they, what they do is they buy up a lot of smaller machine tooling shops and that serve the automotive industry, construction industry, appliance markets, etc. And they've done a good job of allocating capital. Let's just say that. The problem now is that their growth is very slow. Revenue is up 1%, earnings up 7%. Estimates for this year and next year are coming down as well. So from a timing perspective, I wouldn't say Illinois Tool Works would be the one I would pivot into. It would keep it on my watch list along with Carlisle Group. But if I'm picking one or the other, I'd probably say Carlisle Group because of that better valuation and better technicals for sure than Illinois Tool Works. So for now, I would probably not own either. Thanks for the call. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday. That's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So don't forget to cruise over to the new Invest Talk store as well and pick up a hoodie, a hat, whatever strikes your fancy. Store is open now at investtalkstore.com.
Invest Talk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
I was trying to contact you guys about the following ticker symbol, ARE. I had an alert for this on my account. And I'm just trying to see, is this a good time to consider getting into this? I would appreciate your analysis. Enjoy the show, and I hope you guys have a great day. Thank you.
All right, looking at ARE, which is Alexandria Real Estate Equities. And this is a REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust. And it invests in life science properties, okay, and urban office real estate. Okay, so mainly ag tech, technology, life sciences, like I said, mainly in high cost areas. So Boston, San Francisco, Bay Area, New York City, San Diego, Seattle, Maryland, the Research Triangle in Texas and Canada. So clearly they're in high cost areas, but to acquire all of those properties, they took a lot of debt. Market cap now is $12 billion. They have about $13 billion in long-term debt, and that continues to move higher and higher each year. And that's because their payout ratio is very high, 632%. So that 7% yield looks juicy, but their profitability is very poor. And it peaked back in 2021 when life science companies were easy to fund, when technology companies were raising capital very easily, and their occupation rate was probably very, very high. But ever since, it's been struggling. And if you look at its free cash flow, it peaked in 2024 by $1.6 billion. Now we're down to $1.37 billion. And clearly, they're having issues with pricing, with tenants, and defaults. And that's why this is in a strong downtrend. And this is a perfect example of why you don't want to just look at the dividend, and you really want to trust that chart in a big way. When a chart is in a strong downtrend, which this has basically been in for, let's see, it peaked out back in December of 2021, kind of when the NASDAQ peaked out, and it was around $220 per share. Now it's all the way down to $73. So it might look cheap, but the market is telling you something. And I don't like these type of businesses. I don't like these, I don't like lending to these businesses, because a lot of these, especially the life science, biotech names, they are money losers, say that. They tend to burn capital. They sell the dream. They're the historically the Ponzi stocks that have been around for decades, selling the dream of the next cure for cancer or whatever disease they're attacking. And when the cost of capital goes up, well, it's a lot harder for them to raise money. Same with tech space. I'm sure a lot of their tenants are in the private equity companies. And suddenly they're required to maybe work from home. Think of tech space. A lot of them are working from home. So leases come up. They sign them in 2021. 5-year lease. Well, next year they're up. And what are they're likely to do? They're likely to jump ship. Downsize. No need for all that space. And that, I think, is what the market is pricing in. Is how many people want to live in these big cities and go into an office? The office market, it is continuing to struggle, especially these high cost areas. Nobody wants to pay those prices, those premium prices to work in, have an office in a big city where everyone has to live there and commute. No, that's not the way of the world today. And so that's why you have to align up the trends of the sector and put them in your favor. They need to be a tailwind to your investment thesis, not a headwind. And for this, the world has just shifted, and that's why it remains a headwind for the stock price as well as the overall business. So I'm passing on ARE. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein. It's another Invest Stock program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And if anything on today's show piqued your interest and made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, maybe your taxes, retirement in general, sure, we had a lot of discussion there, I encourage you to reach out to us at KPP Financial, where we offer a free portfolio review, as well as helping you get your arms around your financial picture, your retirement plan. Not just for a snapshot of today, but what happens in 10, 15, 20, and 30 years down the line. So head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.